So we're gonna go ahead and get started, please. Welcome to the Mastering Civility session. My name is Christine Porath, and I'll be leading this esteemed group of wonderful panelists here. I teach at Georgetown University and have been working on incivility for about the last couple decades. And there's one question that I believe will determine your professional success more than any other. And it's a really simple question, and that is, who do you want to be? Every day, we're asking and answering this question through our actions. Your success really depends on getting people to give more, so how you show up and treat people means everything. Little actions that you take make work better. We lift people up by demonstrating respect, making people feel valued, appreciated, and heard. We hold people down by making people feel small, disrespected, excluded, belittled. Now, of course, we don't necessarily mean to make people feel that way, but it's all based on perceptions. So one of the tricky things with incivility is that it is subjective and so forth. My own work experience led me to study this. So I had followed my boss down to Florida after interning with the largest sports management and marketing firm in the world. And what I saw, unfortunately, was a very toxic culture. There was a narcissistic leader, and unfortunately, rudeness ran rampant there, and it funneled down through the ranks. And I saw that it affected people. It affected how people treated customers and clients. People took out their frustrations on colleagues. And it really was contagious. And for about the last 20 years, I've been trying to document what are the costs of this and what are the benefits of creating cultures where people really thrive. So what's the toll of incivility? Well, I learned this years ago. We got a call that my dad had been rushed to the hospital. And I walked into the hospital room, and I remember seeing him with electrodes strapped to his bare chest. And this was this healthy, strong guy. And what put him there was work-related stress. Over the course of a decade, he had worked for two really toxic bosses. We also know, though, that incivility really causes people to not perform as well. When we survey people, two-thirds of people, when they feel disrespected, say that they don't work as hard. 80% lose time worrying about the interaction. And what we know from experiments is even witnesses, their performance decreases about 50% on cognitive tests. Their creativity drops about a third. They're far less helpful. And so even if we want to perform at our best, if we're working around this kind of behavior, if we see it on social media and so forth, it pulls us off track. How does this play out? Well, in a hospital context, there was a doctor that told me about a medical team that had a really bad run-in with an uncivil supervising doctor. And afterwards, the team misadministered treatment to the patient. Simple mistake, right? That patient died. And sadly, there's a lot more data that suggests this is all too prevalent. In a study of 4,500 doctors and nurses, 71% said that these kind of negative, rude interactions had led to medical errors that they knew of. 27% said that it had claimed one of their patients' lives. So does civility really pay, though? Absolutely. In our studies, when we survey people about the people they work with, how civil are your colleagues, those that are perceived as civil are twice as likely to be seen as leaders. They are more likely to seek and share information from those that they see as civil, and these folks perform much better. So in biotech firms, it's about 13% higher. And we also found in a study of 20,000 employees across the world, across industries, what do you think the number one thing people want most from their leaders is?
A raise.
Respect, yeah. Respect is right. It was actually more important to people than things like recognition and appreciation, having an inspiring vision, providing useful feedback, even opportunities for learning and growth. And so, you know, people reported much greater health, much greater focus, much greater trust, and they were much more likely to stay with the organization. The other thing is those that regularly felt like they got respect from their leaders were 55% more engaged. And the more respect they got, the more engaged they were. Civility doesn't require huge resources, and simple acts can really make a difference. Doug Conant, a friend of mine that took over Campbell Soup in 2001, is a great example of this. He took over the company when they were doing really poorly. Sales were declining, market share had dropped in half. Gallup manager had said it was the least engaged organization they have ever polled in the Fortune 500. And what happened was, within 5 years, Doug had really turned it around. Performance had increased quite a bit. By 2010, they were setting performance records, outperforming the S&P fivefold, winning a whole host of awards, including one of the most ethical companies to work at, one of the best places for women, most diverse. And so, you know, what did Doug credit for this? He said that he really sought to lead by being tough-minded on standards, but tender-hearted with people. And that made all the difference. And he said every day he had the opportunity to engage in what he called touch points. So these interactions to make people feel valued. And just to give you one example of how Doug did this, he handwrote 30,000 thank you notes when he was CEO there. And again, the whole idea of valuing people, lifting them up. You know, to be more fully present and to engage in these kind of touch points, I think it's really important that we try to fully tune in. One of the things that Doug focused on was listening, actively listening. And, you know, an example of this, John Gilboy, who was COO of a huge consumer products company, he led executive meetings each week. And he thought that multitasking was really distracting to folks. So he decided to experiment, and he put a cardboard box outside the conference room, and he required everyone to drop their phones in it. And he said, and it was a no laptop meeting. And he said, initially, it was very distracting because as the box vibrated, people were very stressed out. But he said, within a month or so, things had totally changed. They slashed the time of the meeting in half. He said people participated much more. And it was a lot more fun. The whole tenor had changed. But also, people carried those positive routines of really connecting with people outside of that meeting context. And today, we're going to hear more of these kind of examples, these practices, from our panelists. You know, for me, it really boils down to civility makes work better. How you show up and treat people means everything. My research really confirms that small behaviors such as smiling, asking questions, thanking people, humbly, you know, acknowledging others, sharing credit, even smiling can really boost the performance of others. Whereas incivility really chips away at people. People don't focus as well. They don't bring their best self to work. So with civility and the idea that it lifts people, you'll get people to give more and function at their best if you're civil. So in our touch points every day, I'd encourage us all to think about who do you want to be and make the most of that. So with that, I want to introduce our panelists here. Celeste Headlee is an award-winning journalist and the author of We Need to Talk, How to Have Conversations That Matter. She's appeared on NPR, PBS World, PRI, CNN, BBC, and other international networks. She hosts a daily talk show called On Second Thought for Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta and was formerly a host at NPR, anchoring shows including Tell Me More, Talk of the Nation, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition. Wow. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Sarah Hobson, sitting on the other end, is director of U.S. commercial for the global virtual sales and customer success America's team at Cisco. She's responsible for driving $1.8 billion of the business and the SMB market for current customers and for driving innovation across the entire organization as Cisco continues to transition to a software-based company. Hobson brings more than 15 years experience to Cisco with relevant experience in cloud, security, and software companies. So thank you, Sarah. Nina Vaca is chairman and CEO of the Pinnacle Group and a presidential ambassador for global entrepreneurship. She founded her company, Pinnacle Group, in 1996, and over the past 21 years has grown it into the largest Latina-owned company in its industry and the fastest-growing women-owned company in the nation. But she also serves as director of three Fortune 1000 companies and has been named one of the 101 most influential Latinas in America for the past decade. So thank you, Nina. So I wanted to start the panel out just asking you for a couple specific suggestions or tips that you would give folks to be more civil, but also that would lead to more influence and effectiveness in the workplace.
Who you started?
Or generally, Celeste.
Okay, so the first thing I would say to you is that stop worrying about the way other people are talking to you, because you can't change those other people. The number one thing that people ask me anywhere I go in the world, this is not just an American problem, is how do I change the way someone else speaks to me? How do I get them to stop interrupting me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And there is nothing you can do about that. Mm-hmm. However, you can improve your own conversational skills. And research shows us that we tend to vastly overestimate our own conversational skills and how well we all listen. I mean, do the math here. Everyone says everybody else is a terrible listener. So I would say to you also that people learn by modeling. That is how human beings have evolved to learn. We learn by watching other people and then modeling their behavior. So therefore, anything that you do to improve your own conversational skills, anything that you do to improve the way you listen to people or speak to other people, it's going to eventually rub off on the other people that you're speaking with, unless they're a sociopath, in which case, good luck. But that's the one thing I would start with, is think about what you can do first, because that's thinking about how to change other people is just going to frustrate you.
I would tend to agree. I want to begin by just simply saying how honored I am to be here with 8,000 women. Talk about girl power. And one man. That's good. There's several. No, I'm kidding. All my whole life I've learned that 70% of leadership is simply showing up. And the fact that you have shown up today to learn more about this incredible, incredibly important topic, in my mind, that's amazing. So you should give yourself a round of applause. But when I talk about civility, one of the things that I think about, look, civility, it can be an amazing thing. You know, personally, I think we can all agree that in the public discourse nowadays, we wish we had more of it. But I'm going to talk to you about civility in my personal experience. I'm here to share my personal stories, my personal experience on why I think this topic is so important. And when I talk about civility, especially among women, I always remind people that to understand the difference between civility and differential. You gotta know that difference between being civil and being differential. And if you can learn the balance between those two and the difference between those two, that's where magic happens. Because you can be civil, be polite, yes, no, as opposed to differential, yes, sir. No, sir. Right away, sir. And because too much deference, particularly as a woman, will make you appear weak. And you don't want that. You can be civil and hold your ground firmly. You can be civil and gain respect. You can be civil and speak out and be courageous about the things that you believe in. But knowing the difference, I think, is really magical. And knowing that by having civility, you can increase your influence. And by increasing your influence, you'll be viewed as a leader. So I think those are two real, in my mind, when I talk about civility, the message is you can be civil and still hold your ground. You can be civil and still, you know, believe in and stand up for what you believe in. It's just understanding the difference between deference and civil that's really important.
Thank you.
I couldn't agree more, and I'll kind of bring it
wrap
together,
it up in a bow.
Right? So, you know, I grew up young female, IT, focused on government selling, and companies like to bring me in to help change things. So I'm blessed Cisco brought me in to help with the evolution that the company is going through. But change is hard, right? So to Nina's point, they brought me in because I was qualified for a reason, but change is hard. And so that's really where people start to put their feet in the ground and they feel threatened. And so the big part of the communication that I've learned is the listening, right? If people feel like they're heard, their voices are heard, their reason is heard, it helps the conversation move forward. And you can still handle your objective of the meeting or what you were brought in to do. But taking people along that journey with you is the important piece. Because if you're not civil and you're just out there running down and breaking the doors down by yourself, you will do it by yourself. And you will not be as successful as you could be if you bring the group with you. And so it is a balance, and it is ensuring that everybody understands why we're doing this and how to do it, and you listen, but you do still push things forward as needed. And it's been fun.
Yeah. Great, thank you.
Nina, starting us off here, you know, how do you handle slights in the workplace, especially if they come from men?
Ooh, okay. So let me give you some context. I come from an immigrant family. I started I grew up in a family business, so I started working at the age of 10. My circumstances in life required me to take over my father's business when I was very young, so I was always a very young person managing. I was in a leadership role at a very young age, is what I'm trying to say. Started my business at 25. Wait, did I just date myself?
No.
No, I haven't told you. You've said for the last 21 years. So I started really early. So the circumstances in my life have always called for me to be one of the first, one of the youngest, or the only, right? And that has some challenges in and of itself, right? You're the first, you're the youngest, you're the only. So when you're sitting across the boardroom, when you're sitting across the table, already you're like, okay, what has she got? And so civility, credibility have been my mantras, really, you know, in the boardroom and in my business. And I'd like to believe that slights don't exist, but they do. And it's not, you know that old saying, I hate to be cliche-ish, but it's not what happens to you, but it's how you react that's really important. And I've learned to react, and for women, I call it finesse. So let me give you an example of a slight that I had and how I reacted, because I think I could have reacted differently. So it's hard enough to rise to the occasion to sit on a public board, right? We can all agree that, and to sit on an audit committee. And I've worked my entire life to be there. And I'm on a phone call. I'm the only female on the committee, and I'm in my office, and like you do in most calls, you have it on speaker, right? So I got it on mute, getting my paperwork together. I worked really hard to prepare myself for this meeting, and everyone's hopping on the phone. You've been there. People are hopping on conference calls, and you hear a vacuum cleaner in the background. And somebody said, a man said, "Hey, Nina, is that you?" Okay, you don't know me yet, but let me tell you something about me, okay? I wanted to come through the phone, right in between the eyes, and I had to think about this in like 10 seconds or less, right? Oh my gosh, I am being slighted big time. And so I took it off speaker, and I only had 10 seconds to think about it. I took it off speaker, and I said, "No, Bob, that would be impossible. At my house, a man does that." And so I tell you this story to tell you that how you handle it, what I wanted to do at the time is come through the phone. But that wouldn't help anybody. And if I would have been, I would have threw something back and I would have been combative, that would have ended up either.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying brush people off and let them know what they do, because there was some follow-up. Now I know. Most of the time when people slight you, it's because they don't know you or they just are uneducated of your world, your circumstances, and who you are. And I feel that I take it as an opportunity to let them know, right? And so there was, I knew the follow-up work would be hard, but at that moment, in front of everyone, I needed to just pivot the situation to say, hey, I'm one of you, I'm here, I'm your peer, I'm okay, I got this. And it worked out really beautiful. So you could use humor, you could use other strategies, but when you're slighted, I always find, you know, Reagan said it best. He said, I do not like that man. I need to spend more time with him. And I feel like in every situation where I've been slighted, they just don't know me.
Yeah.
And so I take the time to spend more time with that person. If a person doesn't like me, I sit right next to them. I'm sitting right next to them. And having the courage and the confidence to say, you know what? I bet when you get to know me, you're going to like me. And so I think there's a little bit of courage involved. I think there's a little bit of confidence involved. I think the way that you react, and if you can pivot, has really worked for me in my life. Combative will never work. And I think that if we think about how we react to those things, I think we'll have a better experience overall.
Great, thank you. And Celeste, you really specialize in conversations,
yeah.
And you have some great advice for what do you do? How do you handle situations if someone interrupts you or tries talking over you?
So, I mean, the first thing, I'll go back to what I said before, is that you can't stop that person's behavior. But there are a couple things that you can do in that moment. I mean, one of the first things I do is I immediately address it. If someone's interrupting me, I say, hey, you're interrupting a lot, you may not be aware of it, but I can't focus. I'm having a hard time keeping my thoughts together, so if you wouldn't mind just letting me finish each sentence, I'd really appreciate that for me. Four of the most powerful words that you can use, and journalists know this, because we have to parachute in all the time, sometimes into really bizarre situations where we're asking people to share their inner thoughts with a complete stranger shoving a mic in their face. And the way that we do that is we say, can you help me? Can you help me? I need to do the story on blah, 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 and I need to find someone who can talk about whatever it may be. And we are primed as human beings to respond to, can you help me? So sometimes when someone's behaving badly in conversation, I will say, hey, listen, can you help me with this? You're interrupting me a lot, and I can't, it's distracting me. Let me get my thoughts straight. I'm not moving as fast as you are. That's one of the things that I can do. You can do, or like it, with, for a slight like that. I was in a meeting with a room full of like 15 guys. Most of them were engineers, and we were talking about how to do a live remote of my show. And I said, "Listen, you don't have a good enough microphone for me. I keep having to bring my personal one. I need you guys to buy one so that you include it in your kit." And the COO said, oh, okay, it's the diva again. And I stopped and I said, oh, way to feed into the stereotype, male white executive. Thanks for that. Check mark, misogyny, now we can move on. So, which is also a little bit of humor, but it's also like, no. I mean, to a certain extent, the thing you have agency over is yourself. And you're going to tell people how you want to be treated. You're educating them all the time through modeling and how you expect to be treated. And part of that is in how you treat other people. You can't be going around interrupting other people and then telling them not to interrupt you. And part of that means that you can't go into these conversations assuming you know what somebody's about to say. And we all do it. Someone begins a sentence, they get 10 words in, you think you know what the rest of that sentence is going to be, so you interrupt them. Even if you don't interrupt them, you stop listening to them, and all you think about is what you're going to say next. So if you expect people to actually listen to you, start with yourself.
Amen.
So Sarah, how has ignoring civility in the workplace impacted you at work, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we all have our own personal stories, and I definitely have some, but, you know, I'll never forget the time where, you know, I'll just blame it on the pregnancy. I was probably like 7 months pregnant, and, you know, speed of business, it needs to move. Sales, we're accountable for a number. And I worked for a company. I never realized how toxic it was until I actually left it. So, side note, right, if something doesn't feel right at work and it's, you know, people were just coming to me to fight their battles, that was my value to them as their leader. stop, take a look at that and, you know, figure out, is this the right place for you? But there was one time where we were sitting in a meeting and my CFO looks at me and goes, I'm going to get you patience training. And I looked at them and said, well, great, you get your team sense of urgency training and I'll take that patience training. needless to say, that did not go over very well. And for the next 4 years, I think that man tried to fire me every time he could. But what it did is it really set back the agenda of what we were trying to fix, which was the speed of business and being responsive to our customers. But the moment I opened my mouth, disrespected somebody of a senior position in front of a lot of other people, it really set the whole program back. And so without civility, mm-hmm. I think I caused our team a little extra work and my boss a couple phone calls. So without it, I think you lose your credibility, you lose mm-hmm. the agenda, and you know, you lose yourself yeah. and who you are. And so I think it's very important, and especially being a woman, because I think by the end of that career, I was described as very passionate. yeah, and we all know what that really stood for.
It wasn't bossy.
No, it was a different B word, I think. So you know, it is really how, know your audience, handle your audience right, and also know that there's things you can take offline and have conversations that you don't need to ensure that you've got that quick wit right back in front of the group, and it will progress your agenda a lot more than putting your foot in your mouth. So my own personal story there.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah. Nina, what's a technique that you can use to gain credibility?
So I have two. It's more of a technique on how to be civil, and the civility will gain credibility. Okay. But I always find that, and I do this too, by the way. Newsflash, not perfect, right? I do this too, and that is when you're talking about a situation to another person, don't attack a third person. Attack the situation. And that's really hard to learn, right? Like, I just had a situation last week where I was so frustrated with the chairman, and I'm like, and he's doing this, and he's doing that, and I caught myself, and I'm like, no, backpedal. I'm frustrated with the situation. Here's why the situation is going to be detrimental. This is not going to lead to a good path that will affect the much larger picture. And so the tip that I always use is don't attack a third person, because the minute you attack a third person, people are like, oh, this is personal. You've just lost all credibility. You don't like that third person. But if you attack the situation, and look, I'm not saying hide who you're talking about. You know, the person who's supposed to be running this place will be unnamed. I'm very mad at. That's not what I'm trying to say, right? But again, use the finesse. Do not attack people directly. That will make you lose credibility. Attack the action. Attack the situation. And I shouldn't even use the word attack, right? You know, I'm thinking this is really a challenge for me because of something bigger. And so I think words matter when you're in a situation. Yeah. At least for me, I think that's one tip. The other tip is I really value IQ, but I really value EQ a whole lot more. And if you can learn that you can't be, women or men, you can't be a one-trick pony where you treat everybody exactly the same, because not everybody is the same. People learn differently, people react to things differently, and so using your EQ and understanding how to connect with people and what is important to them and to convey that situation, I think is another technique, because not everybody, you can't hit everybody the same way. They don't learn the same way. They don't absorb the same way. Or at least in my 21 years of dealing with different people, which is why we PI check everybody, right? To understand how they learn, what's important to them, what is their sense of urgency. And so I find that those two things, number one, don't attack people. You'll lose credibility. Attack the situation if you have to attack. Don't attack. And the second thing is, you know, understand that everybody is different. And you can't just utilize that doesn't mean not be consistent, by the way. It doesn't mean don't be consistent, because leadership is about consistency. But understand that people learn differently and that people are different. And your EQ has to be high in order to connect with people.
Great. So on that note, Celeste, in terms of EQ, what would you suggest as far as when a controversial, you know, idea comes up or controversial topics? I mean, we have a lot of them nowadays.
We do. And we've been using the wrong strategy for literally hundreds of years. And our strategy, and this is especially true in the workplace, our strategy has been to not talk about the things that might cause an argument. Mm-hmm. And as we head into the holiday season, what I'm about to say is especially important.
Uh-oh.
The strategy of not talking about the things that cause arguments is not working. It has been getting worse and worse and worse with each successive generation until we are where we are. And if you can't recognize right now that it's not working, and I'm not just talking in your personal lives and over Thanksgiving dinner, I'm talking in the workplace. Mm-hmm. If you've seen some of the polls and surveys that have come out of workplaces since the November election, you know that morale is in the toilet, turnover is rising higher and higher and higher. It's not working. So here's what you need to do. Instead of avoiding conversations that are going to that might cause an argument, learn how to have the conversation without arguing about it. And you can do that. You can do that quite easily, and I will tell you how. It's you stop going into conversations trying to change people's minds. Stop going into conversations trying to educate people. Because that's actually not a conversation, that's a lecture. What I'm doing right now is trying to educate you along with three other badass women. But this isn't a conversation. We're not having a conversation. A conversation requires an equal sharing of information in which you both understand each other, comprehend one another, respond to one another, and retain the information that you just heard. That doesn't happen if you go in trying to change somebody's mind. And not only that, but if you're trying to change somebody's mind, you're going to be frustrated every single time because it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Instead, you go into that conversation hoping to learn from them. And if you're about to say, or if you're thinking in your head, what if they're a racist? What if they're a homophobe? What if their opinion is so repugnant that I don't want to give them the honor of me listening to them? You will get no cover for that from me because it's not true. You can listen to them and you can learn from them no matter how despicable their opinions are. In fact, you're not doing them a favor, you're doing yourself a favor. And Buddha says, if your mouth is open, you're not learning. And Larry King said, I will learn nothing from what I say today. I can only learn by listening. So if you're going through your days just telling other people what you think and what you know and what you believe, and if you're following that pattern of listening to about 10 of their words, and then all you focus on is what you're going to say next, then you are learning nothing from the people around you. You're taking no benefit from the diverse group of people that you work with. Instead, see them as a resource and go into those conversations to learn from them, and you can be successful in that 100% of the time. And that is how you avoid argument. If all you're trying to do is learn from that person, then you're going to be asking a lot of questions. They're going to be telling you. Coincidentally, you will be building empathy with that person because listening is an act of empathy, which is going to prevent you from having arguments and hatred in the future, even if you disagree. So there
Great.
You go.
Thank you. Sarah, I know as a sales leader, you occasionally have to deal with an unhappy customer or partner. How have you dealt with that, and what would you recommend?
Yeah, you know, you never get called to say, hey, my customer just wants to say thank you and what a great job we're doing, right? Leaders get brought in when the stakes are high and the situation has already escalated. And so that's the fun part of the job, right? And so the first thing you need to come in and do is listen. Like, and I know I keep saying it, but listening is key. I mean, I have a 6-year-old son who... he's so stubborn, but if you just stop and listen to him, you can get him to move. And it's the same thing with adults and in business. It is amazing what my children teach me, I'll tell you that. But, you know, it's listening and then using that, what you hear from them, reiterating it to them and explaining the why behind it. For whatever reason, it goes so much better versus going in and going, I know you're upset. And they're like, how do you know I'm upset? You haven't talked to me. You've heard it third person and that type of stuff. So stopping and listening. I'm also a true believer. There's about 45 sides to every story when there's only two people involved. how you choose to hear it, how you choose to say it is on you. And you know, as a leader, you get brought in to be that judge and jury. And so you need to stop and listen so that you are treating people fairly and you're using the same course across all, and especially with customers and partners. Cisco's a huge partner organization, and if we don't treat our partners fairly, they're going to go elsewhere. And so understanding their position and then explaining the why normally gets us through the difficult conversations.
I just want to add, because that's totally, I agree with everything, and I just want to add further, I want to add further support to that. You know, they did research just a couple years ago, and they were doing research on confirmation bias. You guys know what confirmation bias is? It's where you really firmly believe something, somebody shows you evidence that refutes your belief, and it makes you believe it stronger. So the human race is the only race that suffers from confirmation bias. It is not helpful. It is not a helpful thing. So they've been trying to figure out how to break through this, and it is exactly what Sarah just talked about. So they finally found a glimmer of hope, which for me as a cynical journalist is fantastic. So they did this survey in which they asked people what they thought should be done about the situation in the Ukraine. And then they said, okay, here's a map of Europe, point to Ukraine. And the further off your geography was, the worse it was. And it was bad. The average was 1,800 miles off. Okay, the further off your geography was, the more likely you were to recommend military intervention. But here's the thing. If they then asked them, and these were on all kinds of complicated topics, healthcare, merit pay for teachers, et cetera, if they then asked that person with the firm belief to explain what the effects of that belief would have, tell me step by step how that would play out and what effect that would have, they struggled. And then suddenly they began to doubt their belief. It's the first glimmer of light we have seen that can crack through the belief system that human beings at this moment seem to be entrenched in when you're talking about digging in your heels. So in terms of listening, asking them to explain their own beliefs is one of the, at this point, the only way that we know that gets them to doubt themselves.
So, Nina, what's your advice to women who may become preoccupied with being civil? Is there a healthy balance, or you mentioned anything else that you'd add to that?
Yeah, I mean, again, too much civility could be very dangerous for a woman, just in my mind. You know, it could, again, it could make you appear like you're focusing too much on being liked and not focusing enough on the facts. And I think as women, I always tell my daughters, you know, confidence is the best outfit you could wear. Mm-hmm. And it's no different in the business world. If people see that slight of you're not confident about what you're talking about, I think that chips away at your credibility. But I think being too civil and worrying too much if people like you and am I doing this the right way, I think it'd be really dangerous. Yeah. You know, in my mind, I'm not saying, I want to be really careful here, right? Confidence does not mean arrogance. And it does not mean do not be humble. Mm-hmm. Because I think those, you know, humility is an incredible piece for credibility. And the confidence that it takes to say, look, I don't know all the answers. I think sometimes, not just as women, but as leaders, we feel like we have to know all the answers. We have to be right. People come to you, whatever you say is gospel. And the reality is that I think one of the most powerful tools of leadership is humility. And the opportunity to say, I actually don't know the answer to that, but let me get back to you. Mm-hmm. I think that creates more credibility. So when it comes...
Research backs you up on that.
Oh, good. I'm just using my personal life experience,
yeah, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely true. The magic words, I don't know, but I'll find out.
Right. I just feel like, you know, I've seen it play out too many times. I tend to do a lot around entrepreneurship in America. And I've seen too many women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses really grow to the intellect of just the leader. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I think the reason why Pinnacle has been has been one of the fastest growing companies in America for 11 straight years is because I've had the humility to say, I don't have all the answers, but I'm going to surround myself by some really smart people that have the same values that I do, who are driving towards the same goals. And by the way, women have been an incredible part of that piece. I should say, Shameless plug, 63% of our headquarters are women.
Yay. Wow, excellent.
Yeah, and so. I mean, and I'll add to that. I think one of the lessons I learned is you have to keep emotion out of it. The moment yes. you take it personally or yes. you get emotional in a situation, sorry to say, but it's the moment they got you.
Yep.
And so you need to go to whatever, it's a meeting or a call, prepared, right? Know your facts, know yeah. your data. Like I am, you know, I joke with my team, I am not good at finding data, but I am great at using it because mm-hmm. that is also one of the strongest arguments in any situation is the data. And if you can leave emotion out of it and talk about the data and why you're there and the outcomes and the benefits, it'll help move it forward. And if it does get emotional, don't be afraid to stop it. Stop, walk away, come back to it, and pick it up, because just going higher and higher on the emotion scale does nothing for anybody else. And that's a thing that really kills your credibility, is when they see you as this emotional, crazy woman, and you know all this good
stuff.
And so
I totally agree with you, yeah. and I think it's a little bit unfair.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going through a situation actually right now, this conversation can be more timely, where if you're passionate about something, if you're a woman, you know, you're emotional. I mean, I found something out that, well, I mean, the facts speak for themselves, but, you know, if a man found out about it, he'd be hailed a hero. And a woman finds out about it, oh, you're emotional, you must be vindictive, you must have other, you know, so I totally agree with you, you cannot be emotional. And this is really hard for women because we're naturally sometimes emotional, we're very passionate, and you have to, I've had to train myself, mm-hmm. take the passion and the emotion and lead with the facts, just yep. lead with the facts, especially, and this is especially hard if it's something we really care about or really passionate about. But unfortunately, it is what it is, you know? What is it? I don't make the rules. I just play by them, and I think
or figure out how to manipulate them.
But emotion is a really that's great advice. I totally agree with you.
Let's talk a little bit about the culture and how you build this within your culture. So, you know, as a role model, it's really important. How has business success tied to company culture, Nina?
So for me, company culture. May not be the most important thing in the company. It's just as important as oxygen. It is the oxygen that we literally breathe. And for me, it's been the entire game changer. And company culture comes from the top. Yeah. You've heard the tone at the top, right? Mm-hmm. And I think as, you know, being the CEO for 21 years, I did it again.
You
I've
started when you were like 17. It's great.
Well, I was a little older than that, but I think a company culture is a reflection of its leadership. And so if you are a leader in a company, the culture will be a reflection of the leadership. And so there are elements of me, there are values that I have that I see in Pinnacle every day.
That's great.
You know, the value of entrepreneurship, the value of something big, painting, building something larger than yourself, the value of community, the value of how we can be part of the very fabric of the community. Those are all part of our culture. And I think a positive entrepreneurial culture is really our secret sauce.
Yeah.
And it's hard to build, but I think it can be really powerful.
Sarah, how do you do this in team settings? How do you set kind of the culture as a leader?
Yeah, and I mean, from a culture perspective, I couldn't agree more about, and you know, being young and just, I'm in sales, let's go kill the number, and that's what the company wants. I don't know if I valued culture as much as I did then as I do now, but you don't work for a company, right? I don't work for Cisco. I work for my boss. I work for my team, and it's the culture that we create as that team, and I believe that, you know, and I'm 9 months into it, but absolutely love the team that I am leading right now. But we've taken the time. Cisco has this thing called like the power of teams, where you understand each person's strength, their weakness, you know, how they communicate and all this kind of stuff. So actually taking the time to understand the people on your team and how to interact with them helps to build that culture. And I do believe that respect is key, and it's a multi-way street, and everybody needs to give it. But if you leverage people's strengths, help them with their development, and you guys have mutual respect on the team, to be able to say, I don't know, can you help me? I mean, that's a tough thing to say, and to do it amongst your peers, especially in a sales organization where you're judged on a daily basis of what have you done for me today. It's key and it's very important, and it's leading from the top, right? Mm-hmm. And so the person that I replaced did not have a very healthy culture on the team. She found power in beating down the people on the team, and it was toxic, and luckily the team was able to deflect that from their employees, and it was interesting to come in and watch that and help turn it, but it was the listening and then the showing and the respecting of the team that really brought them along quickly, and so I'm thankful
Thank
for all
you.
That.
We're going to take some questions. I wanted to ask Celeste, you can use the mics, and so we'll take those in just a minute. You know, what's the connection? Nowadays, we see so much incivility on social media and the decline in civility. So can you speak to that a little bit?
So here's the thing, backed up by years of research. You are the worst version of yourself on social media and in email. That's not other people sending you mean emails. When you are writing an email to someone, you are more likely to be to escalate problems, you're more likely to be rude, you're less likely to negotiate, you're less likely to cooperate. It is the face-to-face interaction where you handshake or have eye contact and some form of respectful body contact, especially right now where we're talking about sexual harassment, respectful body contact like a handshake. That creates a bond of empathy. When you are distanced, whether it be through Twitter or email or texting even, you are rude. You are ruder than your normal person, and you're not actually aware of it. The other part of that is that we think it's a really effective way to communicate, but there is zero research to back that up. They've even found that in emails, your closest personal friends and family members are no more accurate at detecting sarcasm than a complete stranger off the street. You are not as good at communicating through email as you think you are, and it makes sense because human beings are designed to watch. Remember, I was talking about modeling. We're designed to watch for tiny movements in somebody's face and body that help us to interpret meaning. We're able to listen for things in the voice. The voice is incredibly expressive, so expressive that in Japanese planes have a device that just listens to the pilot's voice, and it can detect fatigue in their voice 15 to 20 minutes before the pilot feels tired. That's how expressive your voice is. So I would say to you, you can try to change and be a nicer person in email and social media, or you can just be like, I'm a terrible person on email and social media. And I'm gonna start calling, picking up the phone, and going to people's desk more. The average American adult spends almost a half an hour texting and only 6 minutes on the phone. That's Cisco has eliminated voicemail systems. So has Coca-Cola, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, because they weren't being used. That's how little we pick up the phone. And that is ridiculous. I'm sorry, that's ridiculous. You're taking this one talent and skill that human beings do better than any other species on the planet, and you're handing it over to emojis. So that's just... Just limit it. Just keep a lid on it. That's all I'd say.
Great so advice. Questions, great please. Advice. We'll take from the audience. Thank you. Great, please.
The whole meme thing.
Hi, meme. I'm a terrible person in email. And but I do love the GIF. I love how you're using research-based and data-focused language to show this works and this doesn't work. Can each of you tell me or share with us what are some of the things that you're reading or what are some of the resources that you look to help you become better communicators and check yourself, you know, just to become a better communicator? My better book. Listener.
But literally, when I went to go research this, I found that a lot of the advice that we've been getting on Conversation for decades is complete crap. And I know this because I interview dozens of people every week, and I was able to try it out, and it doesn't work. The whole nod your head and maintain eye contact and say uh-huh to show you're paying attention, all that is teaching you how to act like you're paying attention, when in fact, if you actually pay attention, it's really authentic. So I had to go back. The research that I went into all kinds of different fields, not just neurology and sociology, but all kinds of different teaching English as a second language, educational studies that came out of New Zealand and Australia, because I had to sort of start from scratch. And that's that. I was just as though there's a book here. Imagine that's where that's all collected. But try stuff out. I mean, the first thing I would say is try one change and go experiment with it and see the effect that it has.
Yep. And off of that, I think throughout my career, and I'm sure a lot of you have done this, right? You've been analyzed, right? You're a high this and a low this, and this is your strength and this is your weakness. But take the time to listen to it, right? So, and consciously make the decision, is that something you want to change, or are you okay being that way? And I think once you look in and understand you and how you perform and how people receive you, that'll help you as well in your day-to-day. So I read a lot of the data that is written about me and my peers in effective groups and things of that nature to understand what I need to do to be better. Because, you know, I think you've said it is you can change one person, and that's you, if you choose to want to change it. So look in and look around. Feedback, 360s, whatever your company does for you. Take the time to look at that data. And I know we all go, oh, here comes another one. But there is, again, power in the data. And then what you choose to do with it is on you.
So my answer is a little bit different. And again, I'm, to be clear, I'm not the expert. I don't have that research. I'm learning so much here. I'm here to share with you my life experiences. And when you say, what do you do to make yourself better, to make yourself a better communicator? Honestly, role models. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. Is I get the privilege to work around a lot of executive women. Women that are in the C-suite, women that are in the boardrooms, and I just pick role models that I admire and I spend time with them. I wanna be like them. Some of them have mentored me,
or don't.
Right? But no, you pick the ones you want. You pick the people you respect, the people you admire, and you can learn a lot from them. Yeah. And in every situation, because I'm involved in different groups and boards and activities, and that's how I've really tried to help myself. I mean, this is just another strategy you could use. They really know what they're doing, but
you can learn from the people that do it wrong too.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, well, that person's a jerk, actually watch and see what is going wrong here. I'm sorry.
No. The other thing I would just mention is there's a lot of resources. I have a website. It's just my name, ChristinePorath.com. A lot of articles that relate to your question. A lot of recommended readings. Adam Grant and others, you know, are listed there for particular topics. I also have a civility quiz, and so on Sarah's note about kind of testing ourselves, kind of quickly get that feedback. It's free. It's there for you. It customizes your results, so it gives you very specific behaviors that you can work on to really make a difference. And there's also, under resources, a team tune-up, so an exercise that teams can use to provide that feedback. Because like everyone said, I think gathering feedback on what are your blind spots, because most of this stems from a lack of self-awareness, is really crucial. Yeah, so we have time for one more question, and then I think, unfortunately, we have to wrap it up. Please.
I was actually gonna ask Celeste, but
she has a plane to catch.
Observing you guys on the panel, you have a very expressive face.
Yeah.
While you're listening. And I'm wondering, I do too, and I'm wondering if that has ever betrayed you in a conversation.
And how? Why do you get on radio and not TV?
Well, I'm in an executive meeting. So how do you handle and maybe train yourself to be more conscious of your facial expressions when you have
okay that. Two things. Number one, don't try to lie ever. Number two, just address stuff immediately. They've seen it on your face. And it's worse when sometimes whatever crossed my face has nothing to do with them. But I'll see their reaction, and I'll say, the reason I made that expression is because of this. I just use radical transparency because it's already there. and then the times when they have put me on TV and some politician starts spouting off nonsense and I'm going, does not work. And it's the exact same thing for you. They're seeing it. And they're reacting. And the problem is that when you're allowing them to make assumptions, it's never going to be like good assumption. They're never going to think, oh, she thinks I'm fantastic. They're always going to assume the worst. So it's better just to immediately address it and say, I grimaced because blah, blah, whatever it was. And just don't try to lie anymore. Civilly tell them the truth, yeah.
So I just want to thank the panelists for a great session. Thank you.